Already begun a study in the book of 1 Peter and the book of 2 Peter. And last Sunday morning and last Sunday night, I spoke from the verse, Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ. And that's where I want to start again this morning. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ. I think we need to understand who this man is who calls himself an apostle. By what right does he use that word in connection with himself? Why does he say of himself that he is an apostle? Has he always been a good and successful man? Is he truly served God? Has he earned the right to call himself an apostle? Is it simply a bestowed title that he has not in any way earned? Has he been a perfect man? Has he had problems? In order to answer these questions that I think we need to understand in order to help us grasp the spiritual meaning of the book of 1 and 2 Peter, I want us to look in the books that are called and considered the historical books, the Gospels, in order to see the epochs in the life of Simon Peter. And I want us to study also the divine history book of the church, which is often called the book of Acts or the Acts of the Apostles, but in reality it is the Acts of the New Testament church, the Acts of God in the church and with the church, and also from other of the church epistles and pastoral epistles to understand, help us understand what this man was before he became a writer of a portion of the New Testament. This morning I want us to consider this part of his life, Peter the man who did not know himself. Peter the man who did not know himself. Some 300 years before Christ, a man by the name of Socrates had given this advice to his disciples, his students, know thyself. I don't know whether Peter had ever studied Socrates or not. Doesn't make any difference. He was still a man who had not grasped the necessity of understanding himself. Know thyself. And because Peter didn't understand himself, he didn't understand his problems, his weaknesses, his inabilities, his tendency to become over-inflated with his own capabilities, because he misread and misunderstood himself, he cut out a lot of real serious problems for himself in life, and he failed miserably at least once. We know because he did not know himself. He did not understand his weaknesses. I think this is one of the reasons so many of our people have problems today. They don't know themselves. They have not looked inwardly. They have not seen themselves as they really are. And I've said this many, many times, I'd rather pastor sinners anytime than good people. Good people will cause you a lot of trouble, but sinners will help you. It's when people lose their consciousness of who they are, when they lose their consciousness that they have been saved from sin, but they're still sinners. There are people who believe they have been saved from sin, but they've also been saved from being sinners. And that isn't true. We are saved from sin, but we haven't been saved from being sinners, and we won't be. And we won't be saved from being sinners as far as this flesh is concerned until we drop it at the rapture of Jesus Christ or drop it in death. So we need to understand who we are, what our nature is, what our possibilities are, not only for service to God, but also our possibilities as far as doing harm is concerned. Now we noted the call of Peter. The Lord called Peter. Matthew chapter 4, verse 18, he said, "Follow me. I'll make you fishers of men." We have noted his designation as an apostle, Matthew 10, 1 through 2. The apostles, the 12 apostles are these. The first, Simon, who is called Peter. We have noticed his doubts. Now, there was a time when he doubted the nature of Jesus Christ, doubted the personage of Jesus Christ. The Bible tells us that he saw Jesus coming to the ship where he was. Waves were very boisterous, and as he saw him coming, they were frightened because they thought they had seen an apparition or a ghost. And Peter said, "Lord, if it is you, I want to walk out to you and meet you." And Jesus bade him come. Peter walked out, but the Bible tells us he began to sink. We don't know how deep he sank, but he began to sink. And he cried out, "Lord, save me." The Lord saved him from sinking in the water. And Jesus said that, "Peter, this happened to you because of your doubts." We've seen him given a new name. It's prophesied that he would be called Peter. Verse 1 of chapter 42, verse 42 of chapter 1 in the book of John, Jesus said, "We're going to name you again." And the Bible tells us that he did in Matthew 18, 13 through 20. "Thou art Peter." So we've seen his tendency to misunderstand. And on the Mount of Transfiguration, he said, "Let us make three tabernacles." And after that proposal, the men who had been transformed and had been translated into a new appearance, the Bible tells us they all disappeared except Jesus, and they saw no man save Jesus only. We've seen his failure to watch. When Jesus went in the Garden of Gethsemane, the Bible tells us that he took Peter, James, and John, and he asked them to watch. And when he came and found them asleep, he said, "What, could ye not watch with me 1 hour?" Notice the time that he put. He didn't say, watch. Could you not have watched with me for 5 hours or 6 hours? You know, sometimes we leave the impression that in order for prayer to be effective, it's got to be long and loud and rather tedious. Jesus didn't say, "Now, Peter, I'm going to leave you, James and John here, and I'm going to go, and I want y'all to watch for 5 or 6 hours. He said, as he came back, "Couldn't you watch with me 1 hour?" How many of you have ever been to War Memorial Stadium? Let me see your hand. Do they have the most comfortable seats in town? Would you say that we've got the best? Well, better in comparison, I believe, is. Have we got better seats? War Memorial, huh? And we're air conditioned. Would you say really that we're more comfortable than War Memorial? And yet, how many times do you hear the phrase, after an hour of service, an hour and 10 minutes, it goes over 12 o'clock? Have you ever heard people complain and gripe about this? Do you know, if you were in War Memorial Stadium and it was, 15 or 20 degrees, and Arkansas and Texas were playing and they were tied, and Arkansas was on the 40-yard line, and Ish Ordonez is not good kicker at that range, is he? And it's third down and two to go, and somebody says, "I'm tired of this. I didn't mean to stay all this long. And these seats are hard, and I'm going home." You think you'd drag all the people went with you? You'd say, "That guy's crazy." He is absolutely insane. He loves sports, and we're in this circumstance, and if we can make another first down, and we just got, about 60 seconds, about 50 seconds to play, if we could just make another couple of first downs and put Ish in there and kick a field goal and beat Texas, my, and people holler and scream and carry on. But it says, it's 12 o'clock. Right here, sitting on padded pews, air conditioned. Aren't you ashamed of yourself when you do that? If you're not, you ought to be. You know why? Because what we're doing here is a lot more important than the Arkansas-Texas game. I'll say it again. If you feel that way, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. So I love Jesus, and I love preaching. No. Your God is your belly, as Paul has said of other people. Now, Peter couldn't watch for an hour. What, couldn't you watch for an hour? Couldn't you watch for an hour? We need to learn something from that phrase. Can't we concentrate on the Word of God for an hour, hour and a half? Out of all the hours of the day, the first day of the week? It's just a matter of priorities. Think about that the next time you go to the Razorback games. If you go again, I hope you invite me, and I'll stay with you too. I'll stay with you. Be cold or hot, whatever, I'll go and stay with you. I like the Razorback game. Not down in the Razorbacks. I'm just saying I like Jesus more. Now let's look at this man who didn't know himself. Now, we've looked at the vows that he made in the book of Matthew, but let's look again. Here was a man who, now notice, after he'd asked, "Lord, is it I? Lord, is it I?" Every one of them began to say, "Lord, is it I?" After Jesus had prophesied and predicted that they would be offended and would flee whenever he was arrested and brought to trial, Peter came in verse 33 and answered and said unto him, "Though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended." You know, never is a long time. And he said, "I will never be offended, Lord." And this word offend means to cause, to stumble, or to give a reason for scandal. Really what Peter was saying to the Lord was, "Lord, everybody else may give the world a reason to stumble or for a scandal to be started because of their fleeing from you. I want you to know that I will never be the cause of a scandal because I forsake you or because I deny you." And when Peter said that, he denied the opportunity and set the stage for him to be remembered by the Christian world as the man who denied Jesus Christ. Now, when you think of Simon Peter, that's what you think about. Now, there are so many other things the man did that were great. But generally, people say, "Simon Peter, Simon Peter. Oh, that's the man that denied Jesus." And yet he said, "I will never be a reason, or I will never stumble or be scandalized by anything that happens to you." And then Jesus warned him, and after the warning, you'd think, well, Peter would have said, "Now, wait a minute, I better examine myself. I better check this out." Jesus told him, "Verily, verily, I say unto thee, that this night before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice." Now, that's a plain warning. But instead of saying, "Well, Lord, I hope I'm not ever an embarrassment to you, or I hope I don't ever do anything that causes a scandal," he would not let well enough alone, and then said in verse 35, after this plain warning from Jesus the Lord, "Though I should die with thee," he said, I'm willing to die. Not just simply a scandal, not simply an offense. "Though everyone else be offended, not I." Then he says, "I'd even die for you." What Peter did was make a vow. What's a vow? Well, sometimes we think that vows are these, really complicated spiritual endeavors or activities. If we think, well, if a man is going to make a vow to God, he'd need to erect some kind of an altar, and he'd need to bring some kind of sacrifice, and he'd need to wear special clothing, and he'd need to come at a special hour, and with his friends watching, he would make some vow to God that would involve the invocation of deity and and perhaps gestures and uprisings and down sittings, and it would be very complicated for a person to make a vow to God. That isn't so. Vows are simply promises that we make to God. Now, in the book of Ecclesiastes, and you say, well, Peter didn't know. There weren't any Bible, and there was no Bible instruction for Peter. He couldn't have read somewhere in the Bible not to do a thing like this. And therefore, he's really not responsible, Brother Penn, because he didn't have divine revelation to protect him from making this kind of fool of himself. And therefore, he is excused. Now, Simon Peter was a Jew. Simon Peter had read the Old Testament. He had read the poetical books especially. And I'm sure that he had read the book of Ecclesiastes, and that he knew chapter 5, verses 1 through 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 1 through 7. Now notice it. Keep thy foot. Oh, foot. When thou goest to the house of God. And be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice of fools. For they consider not that they do evil. Evil in the house of God. Be sure and keep your foot. Be not rash with thy mouth. Maybe the foot here has to do with the mouth. And let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God is in heaven, and thou upon earth. Therefore let thy words be few. For a dream cometh through the multitude of business, and a fool's voice is known by a multitude of words. When thou vowest a vow unto God. Now he's talking about just coming into the church, coming into the assembly, and talking. When thou vowest a vow unto God, defer not to pay it. For he hath no pleasure in fools. Pay that which thou hast vowed. Better is it that thou shouldest not vow than thou shouldest vow and not pay. Suffer not thy mouth to cause thy flesh to sin. Neither say thou before the angel that it was an error. Wherefore should God be angry at thy voice and destroy the work of thy hands? When we pray, we believe God's listening, don't we? If you don't, there's really not much point in praying if you don't believe God's listening. But is God listening when we just talk to Him? You know, when we're really not formally praying, you know, we hadn't got our hands folded and we're not talking in a deep, resonant voice. And when we've forgotten all that, does God hear? Does God know what we say? God hear what you said by the bed of your loved one in the hospital when the doctor had come in and said, it looks like they're not going to be able to walk again. It doesn't look like that they're going to live. Did you forget what you said to God when your little baby was critically ill? Have you forgotten what you said to God back yonder in World War II? Have you forgotten what you said to God back yonder in Vietnam? Have you forgotten what you said to God when you was hanging there just about ready to fall and in some other kind of circumstance, or the automobile, the brakes went out on it, or something like that? Have you forgotten what you said to God? Well, God didn't hear me then. Besides, I was really shook up and I didn't know what I was saying. And the writer of Ecclesiastes says, do not say that it was an error. Don't disavow it. He said, well, I've just the heat of the moment, you know, preacher. I got excited and said, I'll give 15%, Lord. And he really delivered me. And now you think you're going to hold me to that? I said I'd go to church every service if God would just get me out of this circumstance. But Lord, you don't understand. I was upset and troubled and things. Look, it was a mistake to go into this kind of a rash vow-making and promise. That's what God says. It's a mistake to do that. To make these kind of promises and vows to God and then not keep them is a sin. And Jesus warned Peter. Perhaps one of the most well-known and famous warnings of the Bible. Let's look at the book of Luke. We've been primarily in the book of Matthew. Let's look at the book of Luke. Chapter 22. Now in Luke chapter 22, we have a little more information, verse 31, about this man, Peter. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not, and when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren. And he said unto him, now this is Peter, Lord, I'm ready to go with thee, both into prison and to death. And then warned again, I tell thee, Peter, the cock shall not crow this day before thou shalt thrice deny that thou knowest me. And it's getting late then. There wasn't a lot of time left because it was late at night. And Jesus said before the cock crows, the early morning hours come. Sometimes that's even before dawn. Before then, you're going to deny, not one time, but three times, that you know me. He had been warned. He had a choice. And Peter remembered, I think, what the Lord told him, because Peter later wrote in 1 Peter 5:8, be sober. Be vigilant. For your adversary, or our adversary, the devil, walks about as a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. That's what Peter wrote about the devil. Peter didn't know who he was. He thought he was a real good man, a real strong man, a real brave man, and that everybody else might fail. Everybody else would go crooked. Everybody else would have a real serious problem, but not Peter. No, sir, not good Simon Peter, because according to old Simon Peter himself, he was fair and brave and trustworthy, and he would stand the test. Now, I don't understand some of the chronology that's involved in these circumstances, but I do know that the Bible tells us that Jesus came by and that he looked at Peter. He obviously had not run away and put so much distance between him and the Lord that he couldn't see him or be seen of him, because the Bible tells us that he did look at him before the crucifixion. It didn't take Peter very long to understand that what Jesus says will come true. That ought not to have surprised Peter. You know, he shouldn't have bubbled up and been given to astonishment and surprise when these maidens came and asked him, you're one of the disciples, or his followers, aren't you? And he said, I'm not. I don't know who you're talking about. I've never met the man. I don't have anything to do with him. Thou also wast with Jesus of Galilee. Now, why would the man do that? Why would this man who had seen Jesus heal people, raise people from the dead, he walked on the water, all of these experiences the man had had, the multiplying of the loaves and the fishes and the explanations that Jesus had given them concerning the kingdom of God, and now here's this man who has been an intimate associate with the Son of God, the promised Messiah, the prophesied one of Isaiah, the prophesied one of all of the sacrifices of the Old Testament economy, and yet here's this man saying, I don't know him. He even said, I know not what thou sayest. I don't understand. I'm confused about why you would accuse me of being one of his disciples. It's really perplexing that you would come to me and say, aren't you one of his followers? I really don't understand that. Well, I think we can sum it up in one word, and one word is fear. There are all kinds of variations of fear. And people are subject to many, many kinds of fear. For instance, there's physical fear, the fear of his life, afraid to die, afraid that he would be sent to prison and perhaps treated in the same fashion that John the Baptist was treated, or maybe he was even aware of what crucifixion meant. I'm sure he was, and he did not want to be nailed to a cross and have his life blood spill out and all the pain and agony and shame of such a death. Maybe it was a more nobler fear. You know, we say that the fear of death for a child of God is so inappropriate for a child of God. We couldn't really assign to Simon Peter, who evidently was such an outstanding apostle, we could not assign him this fear of just physical death. But maybe the fear of failure. Maybe thinking ahead and thinking about all that was involved in this commitment that he'd made. And he began to tremble inside. God, what have I gotten myself into? If this man dies, and he's really the Son of God, and Jesus had taught them plainly of the resurrection, though they hadn't accepted it and understood it entirely, yet there had been talk of a future kingdom, and Peter said, well, wait a minute. This load's getting heavy. Well, he was misunderstood and rejected and reviled. And I remember now that he said something about the servant not being above the master. If I stick with this fishing for men business, is that what's going to... Will I be exposed to that kind of ridicule and shame? What about my family? You know, he had a wife. And had evidently left his wife and family for quite a long time to follow Jesus. These things perhaps begun to close in on him. Home, I need a place. I'm getting frightened. What if I fail? What if the Lord fails? And the fear of rejection. And they'd been out the 70 preaching, and they came back. They had some bad news because not everybody had believed what they'd said. And the fear of rejection. Who hath believed our report? The prophet Isaiah said. Somewhere in that area, I feel confident that I'm right. Fear. When he was gone out into a porch, another maid saw him and said unto them that were there, said, not him. This fellow also was with Jesus of Nazareth. And again he denied with an oath, I know not. the man. He couldn't even bring himself to call his name. Called him the man. Couldn't even say Jesus. In fact, he never did call his name in this whole circumstance. Just called him the man. The man. He used to be on first name basis with the Lord, didn't he? Master. Jesus. Now he's the man. The man. Now the lady, I assume she was a lady, she's a maid, saw him and said unto them, Thou wast there, this fellow was also with Jesus of Nazareth. Spoke his name. Spoke his hometown, Jesus of Nazareth. He was with him. I know not the man. And after a while came unto him they that stood by and said to Peter, Surely thou art one of them, for thy speech betrayeth thee. He began to curse and to swear and saying, I know not. The man. The man. You know what happened? That's the denial, the third denial. You know what happened immediately? Just exactly what Jesus said would happen. The cock crowed. And immediately the cock crowed. You know, God, it doesn't take God a long time fulfill his prophecies and his predictions. And when he says, without me you can do nothing, just you believe what Jesus said. Because I can tell you what you can do without Jesus. Nothing. And Paul wrote in the book of Galatians chapter 6 verses 7 and 8, Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. We live in a world of choices. And when we make a choice for self, for flesh, for self-preservation, when we make a choice of that kind, we ought not to be surprised when the words of Paul come true and we reap what we've sown. Spiritually, we make our choices and pay the price for those choices. Young people make their choice and they pay the price for their choice. My mother told me something I didn't know the other day about some of my own close relatives. She said, John, right after Hosea and I were married, a certain person came to me and said, Well, I know you and Hosea love each other and y'all have gotten married. And y'all have moved here in this little house and you seem quite happy. And I'm fed up with home, so I'm going to marry this man who's asked me. He's not a Christian. He drinks and he's a hell raiser. But I'm going to marry him so I can get away from home. And then she lived her life abused and second rate and second choice in this man's mind, and even lower than that sometimes. You ought not to be surprised when the choices you make pay off in the predictions of their kind. You ought not to feel that you've been wronged. Because after you make your choice, like Peter made his choice, things go sour. You ought not to feel badly about that. You ought not to criticize God. You ought not to criticize other people. Peter didn't. You know, I think he was a man in spite of all of the things that I've said about him. And I'm certainly going to say some good things about him tonight. because he got converted. And I didn't say saved, but said he got converted. But the Bible tells us that he went out and wept bitterly. I think the crowing of the rooster was the sound of a broken vow. And you know, there are a lot of sounds in the world today that remind us of our broken promises to God. And there's a sound somewhere when you hear causes your heart to be a little faster. And your blood pressure to elevate because it's a sound that reminds you of vows and promises to God. Maybe the sound of that baby crying in the crib. Maybe the sound of that little boy, little girl's laughter as they play out in the yard and you look outside to see that they're all right. It may be the sound of your husband driving the automobile into the garage and shutting off the motor at a decent time rather than staying out all night long with another woman. It may be the sound of locking the doorknob when that teenager comes in. It's getting late and you're worried and you wonder what's happened to them. And you've said, God, if we could just get through this thing. If we just get through this thing, God. If we could just get through this thing. That boy in Vietnam, that boy in some other circumstance. Oh, God, if we could just get through this thing. Now, there are a lot of sounds. Now, I don't usually advertise popular songs. You know, Chris Christopherson, whether he's Christian or not, I don't know. He professes to be. Wrote Sunday Morning Coming Down. There's really something about it, isn't it? A lot of sounds on Sunday morning. That ought to break our hearts. Cause us to weep bitterly. Because we stand as men and women who just aren't able, because of our weaknesses, to fight the foot and mouth disease that we've all inherited. But I could admire this man because of what he became after this. I want to share that with you tonight in my message to you. But this morning, if you're lost and you're without Jesus Christ, maybe you've heard the sounds of the rooster crowing in this sermon, and you've been reminded of broken promises and broken vows. Listen. Don't fight God. Don't fight the bitter tears. Let it go. Let it go. Don't fight against God. Don't struggle against the Holy Spirit.